Cold mornings, frosty windows. Yep, it's that time of year. So treat yourself and start your day with a cup of fresh roasted Sterling Roastery coffee, sourced from around the world and roasted multiple times a week for unbeatable freshness. It's the kind of warm-up every sports fan deserves this holiday season. And right now, you can win one of three $50 Sterling gift cards, perfect for gifting or building your own winning lineup of Java in the morning. Enter today at sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways so you can wake up, warm up, and Sterling up this holiday season. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
125 defining moments, one legendary league. This is Darren Hayes of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, and a great book is out right now, NFL Moments, 125 Icons and Stories That Define the NFL. It's a definitive visual history of the National Football League, packed with iconic images and untold stories behind the game's biggest plays and its greatest players. From the early legends like Red Grange to today's stars like Patrick Mahomes, this book is a touchdown for fans who crave more than just stories. So give your football bookshelf a Hall of Fame upgrade or snag a holiday gift for that NFL history buff on your shopping list. Pick up NFL Moments, available now at your favorite bookseller. Sit right back and settle in with your headphones on and adjust the volume because Timothy P. Brown of Football Archaeology joins us tonight to talk about the history of some returns. It's quite an interesting discussion and where football could have went. Tim's up in just a moment to tell us all about the details.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And welcome to Tuesday and FootballArchaeology.com's Timothy P. Brown visits us each Tuesday to tell us about one of his famous tidbits. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, Darren. Good to chat with you. And I'm hoping that this our conversation picks up, if you know what I mean.
And I hope you get to the point, eventually here.
I'm going to have to figure that one out.
Yeah. Well, the title of Tim's tidbit that is our point of discussion tonight is The Point of No Return. I had to remind Mr. Brown about his title that he came up with. I did a bad dad joke on it, but that's beside the point. But I used the word point many times there, didn't I?
Yes. So,
Tim, what can you tell us about this article?
Yeah. So this one, the intention here was to just, there was a time that if you're of a certain age, you remember the days when, you know, there's always some differences between college rules and NFL rules. And one of the differences that I just remember kind of sticking out as a kid was in the college game, the defense could not advance a fumble. In the NFL, you could. And that lasted until 1990 when the colleges got rid of that rule. But that's one of those rules where it's like, why in the heck? There's certain football rules where you kind of go, why did they ever have that rule? What purpose did it serve? You know, why did they put it in there in the first place? And so, you know, the thinking was that, coming out of like the whole 1906, you know, football mass play and danger and injuries and deaths and everything, you know, they're trying to find ways to open up the game and encouraging more wide open offensive play. And so, you know, the forward pass is certainly one way that they were trying to do that, and ultimately succeeded. But another way that they tried, and it never really, I mean, it has worked in some ways, but not in others. There was a big move in around 1910. People started looking, and especially those who didn't like the forward pass, they were looking to Canada in their game as, you know, which was much more, it remained much more of a rugby style game. And so lots more lateraling, what we now call lateraling. They didn't have that word at the time, but, you know, so passing to, unplanned passes to teammates who were further wide in some kind of sweeping motion. And so, they were trying to do that. And Frank Hinkie, who had, you know, big four-time all or small four-time All-American at Yale, he became coach in 1914, and he'd gone to Canada and studied, you know, their game. And one of the things he tried to implement, that kind of sweeping, lateraling action, and it just never, it didn't work. He basically got, you know, fired in the next season. But it was, you know, what they were trying to do was just encourage laterals, especially laterals beyond the line of scrimmage, right? The old, what originally was the flea flicker, and now we call the hook and lateral. That's an example of a play. You catch the ball, you toss it to a teammate. So that's a gamble, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're trying to do things like that. How do we get more lateraling in the game? And one of the challenges with lateraling was if you drop the ball, a defender might pick that thing up and, you know, scoop and score. And so to avoid, to limit the risk of lateraling, they decided to implement a rule that defense cannot advance a fumble. And so that was the basis of introducing that whole rule. The other thing that actually preceded that, because that went in 1929, they finally implemented that rule. But I'm, you know, doing this, I'm doing a lot of research on the early forward pass right now. And there was a similar concern with the forward pass. You know, you toss the ball and they were afraid of pick sixes. And so you don't see it much anymore, but a lot of the early pass play designs, you know, they would show the quarterback or whoever the passer was, after throwing the ball, they were instructed to run towards where the ball was thrown as a, you know, not run downfield, but run kind of parallel to act as a safety man in case it was intercepted. Because there was just this, I mean, over concern about intercepted passes and being returned. So there was a proposal in 1911 to limit pass returns to allow them only to go so far as the line of scrimmage. Hmm. So, you know, which is kind of a, you know, it seems like what a crazy rule. Makes sense, you know, given that if you think about it, just like you can't advance a fumble, basically serves a very similar purpose. But it's a rule that they considered and, you know, never implemented. But it's, you know, the underlying rationale is we want to encourage forward passing. We want to encourage lateraling, but that both are risky. And so here's ways to reduce the risk. And so, you know, that was the rationale behind, you know, both kinds of efforts.
Yeah. I mean, if you sit there and you think about it, probably the most exciting play or the biggest gut punch of a play, depending on which side you're on, is, you know, the pick six or the scoop and score. And, you know, they're definitely a part of football that, you know, we enjoy. And it, I think it's more or less the surprise of it and how it turns the momentum of a game around in a split second. And I can't even imagine a game being without that. And, you know, I was alive during 1990, but I don't remember the college rule of not advancing a fumble. I guess I was even officiating in high school and I don't remember that, but must have a.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, you know, as you were talking about those two, you know, to me, the punt return is it can be a wildly exciting play, which is one of the reasons I love the Canadian rules. You know, because the problem with the American rules, you have so many fair catches. It's just like, okay, well, that's boring. Whereas the Canadian rules, the tacklers, you know, the kicking team has to have a 5-yard halo around the guy catching the ball. So he can't fair catch. He has to return it. And because he's got some wiggle room, you know, there's a lot of, you know, even if it's 10, 15 yards, there's a lot of exciting punt returns in the CFL. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's a fun, it reduces the danger of guys just getting clobbered, but it's also, I mean, exciting from a fan standpoint. So I think it's actually one of my favorite parts of the Canadian game. But it, you know, anyways. Kind of a
Right. Yeah,
sidebar.
but I agree with you with the punt return, and the Canadian punt returns are great, and their whole kicking game I really like. I like the rouge and I like all that, the elements of it. But I guess what I'm saying is there's the element of surprise. At least we know when you're punting, you're turning the ball over. It's more than likely the other team's going to get the ball. But when you have the scoop and score or the pick six, that's like so surprise. We run defense and now we're going in for a score. And it's just such a turnaround and turns your stomach upside down if you're rooting for the offensive team and you're ecstatic and going bananas if you're a defensive fan. So just great play. I can't imagine a game without it.
I mean, I think if you're a fan of almost any team, you can remember certain plays where either you got scored on or you scored on somebody else, and it changed the complexion of the game, or it was the winning score one way or the other.
Yeah, I think one of my favorites is the Steelers and the Ravens playing in the playoffs. I believe early 2000s when Troy Polamalu picked off a game. It was a playoff game, and the game was still in doubt. The Ravens are driving, and Polamalu picks off a pass from Flacco and goes all over the field and finally gets in the end zone to finish the game. I was going bananas. It was great play, very memorable. But I've also remember, a lot of quarterbacks, some even recently, that throw it to the other team and they take it in for the end zone, and now you're down a score. Yeah. So I mean, I'm glad that you dig into these things to find out, why the rules were like that, because that's interesting. That's something I didn't realize. And like I said, you learn something new every time you read one of your tidbits. Maybe you could share with folks where they could get this instant education of football.
Just go to footballarchaeology.com. It's a Substack site, so just subscribe. You'll get an email every time that I publish a story. Otherwise, follow me. You can follow me on Substack, follow me on Blue Sky, or just bookmark Football Archaeology and go there whenever you feel like it.
All right. Well, Tim, we really appreciate you joining us here, preserving the football history, and we'd love to talk to you again next Tuesday.
Very good. We'll see you soon.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
You did not see their faces on the Wheaties boxes, nor did they have the headlines, but they were breaking barriers, one pitch at a time. The integration of minor league baseball, a history and player register, 1946 to 1959, by Rick Swain and Gary C. Fink, shines a light on the overlooked heroes who paved the way for future legends. From dusty bus rides to hostile crowds, these players fought for a place in a game that did not want to see them win. More than history, it's a tribute to courage, perseverance, and the power of a game to change. Honor their legacy today and grab a copy of The Integration of Minor League Baseball at your favorite bookseller.